You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 6 August. We've got Disney results before market open this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Chantal Marks, FNB Wealth and Investments, Pick and Pay and ShopRite, the battle of the updates. And if you've got time, a quick word. The market hated the Nedbank results. Was it really just that a sort of a full outlook that they didn't like? Tracy Davies from Just Share, massive wage gap at Woolies. And then you'll be chatting with Satrix on why good investing needs to be repeatable and, truthfully, boring. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Beyond Trump's pointless pause, a pathway towards pragmatism, patience in South Africa's trade relations with the US. Business Day, MTN Nigeria hits 10 trillion naira as sentiment rises on turnaround. As its largest business, the unit has grown since opening in 2001. It's now a third of earnings, followed by SA and Ghana. Morning markets, the US was red, S&P down 0.5%, NASDAQ up, down 0.75%. The East is green, Sydney 0.4% higher, Tokyo up 0.6%, Hong Kong 0.33% higher, and Tencent 1.4% higher. Commodities mostly red, gold futures the exception, couple of dollars up at $3,433, Brent is $6,802, platinum $1,330, and palladium $1,188. The rand is 17.87, Bitcoin 113,400, and top 40 opening call, green open, 600 points, or almost 0.75% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Chantal Marks, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Chantal, appreciate the early morning. We had both Pick and Pay and ShopRite updates out yesterday. I can't recall them both coming out on the same day before. Certainly makes it fun for the likes of us. Pick and Pay, we're seeing some turnaround coming through there, was my thought. And we've also got the Boxer numbers which feed into there. And ShopRite, a lot of moving parts, a lot of restating of numbers, but also looking strong. Your take, I mean, is there a winner here, or they're both just doing well?
Yeah, so I think the narratives are completely different for these companies. ShopRite is kind of your stable, massive ship that is just kind of going through every single storm successfully, and they continue to do well. And you could see that in their growth numbers. I think the share was down slightly, perhaps just because the market was hoping for some sort of a blockbuster print, but I mean, in the context of a pretty weak macro environment, I think they did exceptionally well, continue to gain market share, Checkers and 60/60 continuing to do very well. Perhaps the only brown spot there, YouSave, growing a little bit, the growth was a little bit slow, particularly slower than Boxer. So there could be a bit of a pressure point. And then for Pick and Pay, I thought that the fact that they are improving in terms of momentum was a really positive thing. Look, it's still low. It's much lower than ShopRite, but it's not negative anymore. And that tells me that they're moving in the right direction. And Boxer, again, did very well. And I really liked looking at that clothing number. I mean, as a mom of two small kids, I know Pick and Pay clothing very well, and I can understand why their like-for-like sales were 12.5% up.
Can we say, looking at the Pick and Pay, my first thought was the turnaround's happened. And to be clear, it doesn't mean they're out of the woods. There's a long way to go. But you also said it there. They're no longer negative. They're moving in the right direction now.
Yeah, so I think that they've cleaned up their portfolio. They're still progressing with that. Some of their more difficult, the stores that are in a difficult position are being converted to Boxer stores, which probably means that Pick and Pay wasn't the right brand to begin with. Yeah. So they're still continuing with that. There's still a lot to do. I mean, they're not going to make a profit in the next 6 months or this coming 6 month period. But I can see it playing out quicker, the return to profitability or break even at least, than what was guided for by management. It does feel to me like they are going to surpass expectations on that front. And then you have to ask yourself the question, well, is it fair that Pick and Pay outside of Boxer is valued at zero?
Yeah, which it is, right? I mean, that
yes.
They've got the Boxer, and then there's Pick and Pay kind of for free, which does feel wrong. Let's quickly change track. Nedbank, was it just guidance? Because, man, the results in and themselves, I thought, were fine, but the market was hating on this.
Yeah, I mean, the results were great relative to expectations. It really was just guidance. And maybe I should also just add that the market has been so skittish. Any small miss, whether it's locally or abroad, and shares are just hammered. We saw the exact same thing coming through from Telkom yesterday as well. I just had a look at a fantastic US company called Eaton, exposed to data centers and all the rest of it. Everything was better than expected. Full year guidance raised above current consensus expectations. Just a small tweak to the third quarter. Small tweak, share was down 8% overnight. So we are seeing very big responses to very small misses. And this, I think, I would categorize as one of those instances.
Yeah. And then, as I said, looking forward, the global economic outlook remains subdued and risk elevated. Not good words to hear in that regard. We'll leave it there. Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investments. Always appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Tracy Davies from Just Share. Tracy, good to chat again. Earlier in the week, Woolies came out talking around their first-of-a-kind employee benefits package, 24,000 frontline workers, access to private healthcare. On the surface, sounds great. You've put out a comment that says, and my words, not yours, it's kind of like greenwashing, although in this case, perhaps it is salary washing. It's missing the bigger picture.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yes, you know, so first of all, let me say that there is nothing, you know, to criticize about the provision of healthcare itself to these workers. It's a great initiative. My understanding of this benefit that these workers are being provided with is that it provides them with access to kind of primary medical care, so GPs, medication, glasses, that kind of thing, which is fantastic. But we are still talking about a workforce which predominantly and on average earns around 8,000 rand a month. And, you know, there's just no way that we can describe this as a living wage in this country. If you think about the fact that the July 2025 average cost of a basic nutritional food basket for a family of four is 3,755 rand. Mm-hmm. That means that you're saying that a Woolies employee who works full time and earns 8,000 rand a month and is more than likely supporting a family of, let's say, four people, is spending almost half of their wages on food alone. So our argument is not that it's bad or wrong for Woolworths to provide these healthcare benefits. It's great and a great initiative. But it doesn't negate the fact that these are workers who are not earning a living wage. And this is in a context of a company whose CEO last year was paid 122 million rand. And that's where we say the unreasonableness comes in.
It is. And it's the key point. I chatted, I think it was last month, with Leila Ibrahimi from PwC around just that. And yes, the law says there's a minimum wage, but really the minimum wage is a ludicrously small number. It is about that living wage. And when we put it in relation to what a staff member is earning at Woolies relative to the CEO, I mean, latest data shows it to be, you know, CEO gets 1,300 times more. Now, I'm sure he's worth a lot, but that just, it's that disconnect between the two.
There's an enormous disconnect. And, you know, I think this country is kind of addicted to cheap labor. And the sense is that, you know, anybody who's got a job should be grateful to have that job. It doesn't matter what they earn, they must be grateful because there's so much unemployment in South Africa. But the people who say that, first of all, none of them have to support their families on 8,000 rand a month. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it is a very short-sighted view from the perspective of building our society as a whole. You know, that internal wage inequality in big companies is a key component of our overall inequality in South Africa. So keeping people at these levels of pay means the rich get richer, but it doesn't support the aggregate growth of the economy, and it doesn't assist in building a middle class who can comfortably educate their children to a standard that allows those children to lead a better life. And so by paying people these wages, we are not growing the economy. We are not making a contribution to inequality. We're really just perpetuating the cycle of poverty and inequality that really just plagues South African society.
And that is a great point. And it is. I mean, it is why we have that just horrific disconnect and poverty in our country. And a lot of that poverty is from people who are working. We're getting the remuneration disclosures are coming through that, you know, companies will have to disclose all of this. My sense is the risk is it's just going to sort of be a bit of a box-ticking exercise rather than companies actually saying, well, you know, is 8,000 Rand a livable and dignified amount of money to pay an individual? They're going to sort of just tick boxes and say, well, here's the data and we pay more than minimum wage and we're just going to perpetuate the crisis. Mm.
Yeah, look, I think, and remember that the companies across the board vehemently resisted legislation that would require them to make these disclosures. So they really didn't want to make them. And it's exactly because of these kinds of conversations that get had once those disclosures have been made. But I do think that the disclosures are actually leading to some good results in some sectors. You know, if you look at the banking sector, we see some quite significant increases in minimum sort of lowest paid salaries, which I think are a direct result of the knowledge that these numbers are going to be scrutinized. And you even see in some cases, for example, Investec recently insourced a bunch of employees in order to bring them into that minimum. So there's some good stuff coming out of it. But unfortunately, the retailers in particular are in a different category, and there's a really strong sense that I think, you know, that these people, they do a menial job and they're lucky to get paid what they get paid, and that's the end of the story. And I would hope that these retailers come under increasing pressure to, as you say, minimum wage is the floor. It's the absolute floor that everybody should be earning, not, you know, the best we can do in the circumstances. And a company that's earning the kinds of profits that Woolworths is earning, that's paying its executives the kind of salary it's paying, it should at the very least make sure that everyone who works for it and contributes to its success is earning enough to lead a dignified life.
Is there an argument? And I know what the corporate arguments around executive pay, and I don't want to go down that debate because we'd be here all day. I mean, is there an argument to be said that if the CEO of Woolies took, I don't know, what's it? I mean, I need to do the math in my head quick. If he sliced a couple of million off his salary every year, I mean, it could almost make differences. But I mean, it's actually about perhaps taking a slight dent to the profits.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, as you say, these arguments about, well, arguments, discussions about executive pay are fraught. I don't think it's unfair to say that there is really no relation whatsoever. If you look across the board at the South African listed sector, there's no relation between profitability and success and size of company and executive pay. It really seems to be quite random, depending on the particular way that that remuneration has been calculated. Mm. But there's no doubt that you could close the gap and make a difference at the bottom if we weren't so obsessed with these stratospherically high salaries and payouts at the top. I mean, really, nobody needs to earn 122 million rand in 1 year and 65 million rand a year after.
Yeah, I agree on that 100%. And I mean, it is just, I mean, it's numbers that are absolutely crazy. Woolies has about 34,000 employees, an extra 10,000 rand there each per month. It's going to take a hit, but it's not going to bankrupt anyone. We'll leave it there. Tracy Davies, just chair, appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund delivers capital preservation and consistent top quartile inflation-beating returns. Let your money keep working with Standard Asset Management even after you retire.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Duma Nkengi, Head of Business and Market Development at Satrix. Duma, I appreciate the time today. I was chatting with a guest last week. Too much noise in the market. We should learn to shut most of it out. And then an article that you had written came across my desk, essentially saying kind of the same. I mean, in a world filled with noise and short-term hype, we forget that quality investing is really slow and, frankly, boring. And it should be boring.
No, absolutely. And thank you for having me. Good morning to your listeners. Definitely it is. I mean, it was quite difficult, you know, to put this audit together because typically in investment, you know, you are, you know, kind of enticed by trying to make things sexy. But the reality is that, you know, you have to stick to a plan. It is boring. You shouldn't be checking the markets every single day. And this is our attempt to sort of say, what is the strategy if you want to take a boring strategy that also gives you the desired results?
And you made a really great point in it because I like what you say there. But, you know, the best investing, it's not about being reactive. It's about being repeatable. You know, if I randomly buy a stock and it doubles, I feel like a genius.
Yes.
But it's my ability to repeat it that's so hugely important.
No, absolutely. And you're not 100% sure whether it's skill or luck, right? And I was fortunate enough very early in my career, because I started off as an equity analyst, junior equity analyst, maybe a failed one, I might add. But one of the gray hairs, I mean, set me down and say, look, I mean, if you are focusing on, let's say, your discretionary portfolio, specifically focusing on growth assets, equity over the long term is going to give you 10 to 15. It's not about picking stocks. It's actually about just gaining the desired exposure. And I've kind of followed that ever since he told me that.
It is, and it's that exposure. And that's where ETFs come in. They're that easy exposure. They're the instantly diversifiable. And it's just the boring, easy part.
And I love it. I mean, it's simple to understand. It's giving you diversity. It's low cost. And at a cost effect also does have a positive, you know, compounding effect in terms of your returns. And that's why I love it, both on the local side as well as on the offshore side for the rand hedge.
You made that point around offshore. I mean, we have some great ETFs in our market. The Satrix 40 is going to be, 25 years old in December. The key thing, though, of course, our economy is, what are we? We're 0.5% of the global economy. We're overinvested locally, our jobs, our houses, our relationships. We need that offshore exposure. And again, it's a giant pool. It's just easier with an ETF.
No, it is. It is. And again, I mean, exactly what you've just mentioned. And I like the offshore components precisely because of what you're saying, but also people just understanding, you know, what the type of exposure you can actually get. I mean, for example, maybe to give you an unpack is that, you know, the starting point is to look at, you know, strategies which are market cap based, which are broad indices, let's put it that way. So your MSCI World gives you almost 80% exposure to global equity. You know, you've got the EM as well, which is the emerging market. You can combine the two, which gives you all country. And then that's a great starting point. Then, you know, once, you know, you have loyal listeners, you know, to your radio station or people who follow the news, then you can become a little bit more acute where you start looking for specific exposure, even locally. That means, you know, you start becoming country specific, or in South Africa, you start looking at sectors. I mean, it's been quite interesting. I mean, just looking at, you know, just the sector exposure in South Africa, and resources has done exceptionally well. Now, I mean, if you're not, you know, doing your homework and doing your own research in terms of which companies to actually invest in, I mean, the best way to do it to get a similar exposure would be a ready or a commodity-based, you know, type of ETFs. So those are the things, you know, people need to think about. And I'm not saying you don't look for single stocks, but it does require a lot of insight and understanding of the market before you can make that call.
Yeah, and that Resi one, your colleague Sia keeps on tweeting it on Twitter. Fortunately, I hold it, but there's a lot of FOMO for the folks who don't. But you make a great point there. We're not saying abandon the single stocks. We're saying your sort of ETFs, you start with that wide diverse, I mean, effectively in all country world, and then you can go sort of sector specific with the ETFs, and then you can add the stock. But it really sits at the top of the pyramid because it's the harder to do, and it's the more risky.
Absolutely. And most importantly, you still have your growth asset growth, let's call it growth asset exposure or equity exposure. So we're not saying keep money cash, time the market. We're saying you need to be in the market and get the desired return. But when there are opportunities, you can actually fund it from, let's say, your core portfolio into stocks or specific sector exposure or region exposure.
And it comes back, and you also made a point. I mean, back in April, we had Liberation Day tariff collapse. And the best thing to do then was, as is usually the case, do nothing. It comes back to the boring part.
And I'm curious to also find out how many people actually didn't do anything, actually listened to sage advice from financial advisors, et cetera. I think a lot of people were tempted to actually, you know, sort of disinvest in the market. And the problem with that is that then you're crystallizing the losses. Whereas now, I mean, it has rebounded. We've actually forgotten what happened in the beginning of the year when it came to tariff.
Yeah, we sit back at all-time highs. And as you say, April is a distant, distant future. We'll leave it there. Dumkangi, Head of Business and Market Development, Satrix, appreciate the time.
And that is the poll there. Dumi was wondering how many did exit back in April. And to be clear, it was wild and woolly in the markets. And the US markets were almost 20% down at one point. So that's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Did you sell back in April, or did you hold tight and reap the rewards? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. We're chatting with Perkele Radenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors yesterday, asking him if he was still bullish on gold. His answer was yes. We asked you if you were bullish for gold to still run higher. Two-thirds said yes, absolutely. A fifth, around 20%, were saying no, it looks done. The rest were saying no gold for you. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, to my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.